Hello, everybody, and welcome to Two Sides of the Same Coin, our podcast. We're excited to have you aboard. We have an interesting topic today, a very interesting person. We want to have her share her story. But I'm going to introduce you to my twin brother, Roy. Will you tell us a little bit about what we're going to be talking about?
Absolutely, Thurl. Welcome. Again, I second him in thanking you all for coming on the podcast. We're excited to get started in this. We do have a wonderful story from someone that they're going to share with us, Jamaica. But we're going to talk about all kind of topics. We'll be bringing things to you related to relationships, love, politics, entertainment, sports, health, wealth,
passion,
criminal justice reform, something that we're definitely excited about sharing with the public. And so, so we're excited to have this show get started. And we've got Luana with us. Maybe she can chime in right now on what we're...
No, better yet, Luana, introduce yourself. How do we know you?
Yes, Luana, how did we get to know you? How far back do we go?
Like 20 plus years, like over 25 years. So how I got to know them, my name is Luana, by the way, and I'm excited to be on this show, be a part of this podcast. How I met Thurl and Roy is I was their employee about 25 years ago when they first started their medical company. I was one of the first few employees.
She used to come to my house and pick up her check, yeah.
I guess I did. I used to come pick up my check.
Come through the garage.
Yes, I did.
Back in the day.
Yes, I did.
Okay. And what else would want? I mean, we've known you. We've reconnected in the last couple of years and kind of been on a couple of adventures together. This being one of them, we're excited to have you aboard and part of the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be here as well.
You know, we celebrated this coming of this show a couple of months ago. We talked about it. It was a Can We Just Talk type of a promotion. A lot of people came out to support it. It was a fabulous night. We're going to be monitoring and sharing, or not monitoring, sharing some of that night with you guys today at the audience as well. Roy, we also had a special guest on that particular night. Who was it?
Jamaica.
Jamaica.
Jamaica came that night. Well, actually, that's how I got to know Jamaica because he was on a set with us, a series that Thurl and I are producing together called In the Black. And so she came on the set and as an actress. We are looking to maybe have her as a regular on the show, on the series, and so we're excited about that. But that's how I came to know Jamaica originally, and then I invited her to come out for us to celebrate getting our podcast going. So again, I just want to flip back now to Jamaica. Her story is what we're here to listen to. She's a very inspiring young lady. I followed her on social media. She's got so much inspiration, so much positivity. She like all of us, has been through some things, and she's come out stronger from it. And so we're going to get into her story. So Jamaica, again,
welcome.
So yeah, I'm excited to have you here again. Yeah, and so let's start, first of all, where are you from originally? Are you from Minnesota? Are you from
Chicago?
Okay, yes. From Chicago.
Originally from Illinois.
Okay, and how long have you been in the Twins in Minnesota?
Since about 2012, for about 11 years.
Okay.
11 long years.
11 winters,
yeah.
Huh?
Oh, yeah.
So I got to ask you this, coming from Chicago, do you feel there's a marked difference as far as the weather goes?
Yes, like, and Chicago? People say it all the time. Like, oh, you're from Chicago, you're used to it. And I'm like, well, Chicago is the windy city. Like, here it's frostbite cold. We don't get frostbite cold.
Well, you're from Peoria, Illinois.
Yes,
right?
I am.
Native city of Illinois, Chicago.
How far is that from Chicago?
A couple hours outside Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Is there a marketable difference between people from Peoria and Chicago per se?
No. Because we have so many people from Chicago than Peoria. And mostly people that's in Chicago is from down south.
Yeah.
They migrate from down south.
St. Louis.
Louisiana, Arkansas, deep south. Mississippi.
You all migrated over to Minnesota.
Share with us, Jamaica. You came to Minnesota 11 years ago, you said?
Yeah, small town in Gaylord.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, back up. Oh, you came to Gaylord, Minnesota?
You came to Gaylord, Minnesota yes. first? There's a Gaylord, Minnesota?
Yes, there
and
is.
And we have a golf course there?
Next to New Orleans.
You would know that.
I don't think so. Yeah. I ain't never heard of Gaylord, never Minnesota.
It's next to New Orleans. It's very small, with a population of 1,000.
No.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just gotta, you know, begs a question. You don't only...
Yes, I was. I was the only black person. Everybody knew me and my son because we were the only one.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're selling in Gaylord, Minnesota, right?
Yep. What was that?
Is that? That's north. Is that north?
Yep. So 212, past Eden Prairie. Brainerd,
Brainerd, that type of area.
No, she said Eden Prairie. That's south.
Oh, that's south.
Past. North. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So how long were you there?
Until 2015, when I caught my case.
Oh,
you caught a case.
You caught a case.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so then you too.
Definitely.
Okay.
Caught a case and then kind of lost pretty much everything. Okay. And I caught my case out in Washington County. So when I got out of Shakopee and the county, they kind of just like dropped me off.
Well, let's back up. I know you said you caught a case, but just for the audience and for all of us, you know, some of us know.
Mm-hmm.
When you say a case, it was a
drug possession.
Okay, drug
possession. Yeah, second degree felony drug possession.
Okay. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. You caught it out there in Taylor's?
I caught it out there in Washington County.
Oh, Washington County?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And then that was obviously.
So that was state, not federal?
Yes, state.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm sure that was disruptive.
Yes, it was. I had my son with me at the time.
How old was he at the time?
Seven.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That had to be kind of nerve-wracking. You've got a son. It's just the two of you kind of out here.
Yeah.
And
no family.
No family.
Mm-hmm.
All the way from Chicago in this little tiny town called Gaylord, Minnesota.
Yeah.
And you got a state case on a drug case.
Yep.
Okay. Take us through what happened. How did you manage to get through all that?
Well, I didn't. So I kind of just went through the motions. I got out. I was fighting two cases because I had my child with me at the time that I got arrested. So I was fighting a CPS case.
Was he placed in protective custody?
So my crazy mother, my sister came down, got my son and left. And so the state was trying to find my son. And my mom was like, I'm not letting you guys get this baby. So she never contacted him back. She never brought him back to Minnesota. She didn't do anything. I'm not giving y'all my grandchild. And so
why would they want to get involved in that knowing that the child's got family?
Because I didn't have any family here. And so since everything happened here, it was like it became a Minnesota thing.
Okay. So did you tell them that you had family back home or back in Chicago that could come get your child and they still wanted to intervene?
Yes. And so instead the judge was really lenient. And just assigned me a guardian ad litem, which is the person who kind of looks after the child. I was like, no way, we're not gonna do anything, but we are gonna assign you some woman that's gonna look, you know, after you and do daily check-ins. And then we did that for a long time, and then the lady finally was like, you don't pose any harm to this child, like other than that case that happened, and so we closed it out, and then I was just fighting the same. Yes.
And so with the case, what ended up happening? When you caught the case, did that lead to incarceration?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
I was originally, it was like, you take it to trial, we need 26 years.
Whoa.
And we know we can
stay 26
you.
Years?
Yes. They were like, we know we can get you with it.
Can I ask you a question? Was it a conspiracy case?
It could have been.
I mean, were they trying to bring in more people, or was it just...
Well, yes, but it was kind of a, you tell us everything you know about something. You tell us the people. And I was
that's
like...
The MO.
I don't know what you're talking about. And they just kept beating it, and I just kept saying, because we grew up like that. We grew up in Chicago, like, you know what I'm saying? So I just was like, I don't know. So they kept...
In other words, you said, you don't want you snitching.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like, no. And so he was like, okay, well... What do you want to do? So I decided not to take it to trial. I had a public defender. So, you know, she was just trying to get me in and get me out.
You took a plea.
Yep. The judge was really nice. He asked for references from people that knew me.
Was your family assisting you at all or involved in helping you at all at this point back in
Chicago? So, other than having my son, then my sister came down, no. Everybody was, it was a shock to everybody.
And you have a sister. She's an older sister.
She's 33.
She's okay, she's a little older. Okay. So she came down.
She also has a couple of brothers. We'll get to them brothers.
Let's hold on. Let's continue. Continue on.
So they were helpful in that aspect of coming to get him at the time that it had happened.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time that I was finishing up and I had got released, I was like, nope, I want my son back.
Mm.
And so I got back.
I'm sorry. So he was with your family while you were away. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah, that's support. Yeah. Yeah, that was good.
Mm-hmm.
You come home from prison after a year.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
I had lost everything. I didn't know somebody could lose something
mm-hmm.
so fast. Mm-hmm. Like, I was young, mm-hmm. in my 20s, so mm-hmm. I was so naive, mm-hmm. and I was still growing, and
mm-hmm.
I was, like, on the street. With nothing, I had lost my car. They had took my car.
Were you still out there? Or had
nope.
You come
at this point, I was in the city.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
At this point, I was in the Twin Cities.
Released to a halfway house?
Nope. I'm just released.
Oh.
Yep. Okay. I was just released.
Okay.
And yep, they took my car, my place. Everything was.
Were you on probation though, right?
Yep.
You had a probation officer.
Yes.
Were they engaged at all in trying to help you?
Yes, and my probation officer is my friend to this day.
Okay.
I have her number and my cell phone. I go to her house and we have.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
She's. She was all I had here.
Now, was she your probation officer in the Twin Cities, or was the probation out there?
Washington County. I had one, but when they realized that I was going to be primarily in the Twin Cities, they transferred it to Hennepin County.
Okay.
And so that's when I got court.
And that's where you yeah. came across this particular mm-hmm. probation officer.
Yeah.
Okay.
She was dope.
Okay.
I guess she is.
But it's still, the situation itself led you to, you say homeless?
I was homeless for 4 years. So from 2015
4 years.
To 2019.
4 years.
Well, when you talk about homeless, people kind of hear that and they kind of gasp about that. Are you saying you were like on the street or you
yeah.
living in a car?
So
or you were living in a bus? I mean, what was homelessness like?
The street.
And you're talking about Minnesota.
Yes.
This is considered a less of a better term, a welfare state where it's really supportive of
yeah,
women and things like that. So how does that happen in a state like Minnesota?
So, homeless. Homeless right. streets, homeless train, homeless storage unit with my son. I did end up buying the car.
Wait, a storage unit?
Yes.
You lived in a storage unit?
A 5x5. It was the only thing that I could buy that they couldn't deny me for because I had that felony. So, no place would give me
A
place.
You couldn't get rent. You could. No
so when you're a felony, you're not eligible for Section 8 or anything like that when you are a felon.
Yeah.
So
was that back then? Because I think now is a little bit more lenient.
Well, I would hope so.
Yeah.
Let me chime in on that. They're trying to move it further to be more lenient, but mm-hmm. it's still out there. There's an initiative out there, legislative initiative called Ban the Box, where when you apply at places, you don't have to check the felony box,
mm-hmm.
which is what leads to them eventually hitting you or denying you.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So, but we're not quite there yet, but we need to get there. But yeah, continue on.
Yeah, so
you couldn't rent.
The 5x5 is the only thing that couldn't deny me.
And that's
so I'm like, I have to do something for my son. You know, when you're a mother, I mean, you just don't stop thinking.
We are film buffs and TV buffs, all mm-hmm. of us are that's in here. And we see stories like this in movies all the time.
Yep.
And you just think, wow, that's just something and how people make it work.
Yep.
There was a well known movie called, what was it called? She won an Oscar for it. We'll have to get the title, The Box or something like that. It was an amazing story about a mother living with her son in this little square space that was.
Oh, wow.
They were kind of almost held hostage there. I can't remember.
The
Great Story. The Room.
Yes, The Room.
Right. She was kidnapped.
Yeah, she was kidnapped. But
she's
living in this small space with her son.
Yep.
And it's like, how are they living? And
yeah.
Different circumstance, but You understand what I'm talking about in terms of that?
Can I ask you a question?
No. Go ahead.
When you got your child back, was there any part of you thought maybe I should send him back to Chicago while I'm going through this period, while I'm going through this storm?
Yeah. He went back and forth multiple times. He went back and forth from here to, my mom was living in Florida at the time. He was going from here to Florida. And then sometimes my mom's like, oh, I'm going to send him to Kentucky. So she sent him to Kentucky. So he was kind of all over the place. So I always wanted him back. That's my son. Yeah. You know, like, I want him back.
He was separated from you, and you lost that bond at that point.
Yeah.
Years you can't get back.
Nope.
And so you don't want to lose any more years than you've already lost. So naturally, you're going to want him to be with you. I understand that. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So thankfully, you did get him back. You're trying to make it work. So I'm just trying to find out.
Well,
so
I want to step in really quick about something that we want to address, too. You have a son. He's young. His mother's been kind of ripped apart from mm-hmm. ripped away from him. How did he adjust to this in terms of your observation of your son?
So he took it hard. My sister never sent me videos of him writing letters. He'd be up all night writing me letters like, "Where about my mom?" Or you know, he struggled. His happiest moments was when he was with me and we didn't have anything. We were sleeping in a car in storage and he was the happiest kid. And he used to make me so mad.
Mm-hmm.
Grateful, but I was mad because I'm like, he's happy with nothing. And I'm like, I can't suck this much as a parent. So I was mad. Mm-hmm. It was like guilt.
Mm-hmm.
But I was grateful that he was as happy about the situation that he was. Like, he's like, okay, mom, let's go to the park. I'm like, who's going there anyways? We had nowhere to go. But he saw that as a time to play.
Well, he missed his mother. He missed that connection that you had. You know, when you went away. So, the love is far more meaningful.
It is.
It doesn't have to do with material things or environment necessarily. It's about that person. Okay, so you're trying to make it. Homeless. I mean, I'm just thinking of the winters. What were they like?
Cold.
I mean, but how did you? I mean, Minnesota, like you said, Minnesota is frigid, and it's not more so than Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, there's homelessness around the world in the country. California, you see it there, but Minnesota and its winters.
Yeah.
Cold. That's a whole nother. So, what were you staying in the? And how did you get heat? Because
thankfully, during those winters. We have the storage unit, so that was towards.
How did you have heat in there? Because they don't.
Oh no, I have blankets. Oh yeah, I have blankets. I was improvising.
You made it work.
Yeah, I made it work. Like one winter, I had my car, and it was cold outside, and I was in between like turning the gas on to heat up the car, but turning it off to save the gas to be able to travel. So I would just be up all night trying to save it. And my son woke up in the middle of the night when I'm like, Mom, I can't feel my feet. And I had already wrapped him in everything. So I got in the back seat of the car and I took off all my clothes. And I just had my dry underwear on. And I wrapped his feet in everything I had on. And I sat there and I was so cold. And
mother's love.
Mother's love.
Yeah.
He was cloaked in his mother's love.
Yeah.
He was cloaked in his mother's love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was,
So you're going through this. You said it lasted about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
When did you see the light at the end of the tunnel, or did you lose hope?
Yep. So in that same winter, I was going to drive us off the bridge.
Oh, what?
In St. Paul.
So you
had
that.
Yeah. I was down to like, this is the first. Yeah. I was like, nope, this is it. I sat at that bridge, and I was smoking at the time. I was 100 pounds. I was very little. I hadn't eaten. Everything was going to my son. And so I was like, okay, I was smoking and I was just drinking coffee. That's like all I could afford at the time. And not cigarettes, because cigarettes were expensive. So I was smoking Black and Brown. And I sat there all night and I prayed about it. Like I was tired and I was stressed, but I kept praying about it. I kept praying in the same instance.
So you're literally sitting on a bridge.
Yep.
What bridge?
It's that bridge over in St. Paul that everybody jumps from.
I know you're talking about.
Yeah, and I just remember it.
So you were going to drive the car?
Yeah, I was going to drive the car over it. I sat there, I prayed about it, and then I just had a moment of just drive away. and I drove away. Oh, and nothing got better. Let me just say, when I drove away, I still was driving back to being homeless. Because after that, somebody broke into my car and stole a lot of my things. And that's how we lost
were
the
you
car.
Reaching out to different organizations for help? Salvation Army?
Mary Jo.
Shelter? What shelters? What happened to shelters?
There's so many shelters.
Oh, you stayed in?
But they only give you like 30 days. Shelters.
Okay. They only give you 30 days. Yes. A lot of people.
Unless it's like a domestic violence, you know, or something like that. So I would run through those 30 days. I always kept a job, so I'm like, I'm always working. So the county would never help me. They would always say, you got to stop working.
What about motels? Extended living motels?
Yep, stayed at those. Out in Bloomington.
Yeah.
But I mean, that only gets you so many days, and hotel prices.
But if you're making. Is it affordable? Was it affordable?
So almost like $400 a week.
Yeah, almost like
$400 a week. And I mean, I was
not only that.
So Jamaica, what kept you going? What when you decided not to go over that bridge? Mm-hmm. What is it that made you feel? I mean, were you continuously thinking this is a hopeless situation, or did you feel at some point you could see the light at the end of the tunnel?
I think I just found peace.
Okay.
And I said this on my social media, it was a moment where I was just like, I gotta let God have his way. I kept fighting it, you know, so you just keep fighting it. Nothing happens. And so I just got to a point where I just stopped fighting it. I became friends with all the homeless people. I see them today and we talk. And I just was like, okay, if this is it, I'm just gonna have to keep doing what I'm doing, but do it happily. I know it sounds crazy.
So at some point, did you feel you were you resigned to being homeless? Did you think this was just going to be your lot in life? Or were you thinking at some point you could overcome this?
No, I wasn't going to make it. I just didn't know when. I mean, after so many years, you know.
4 years.
I was running through so many avenues. Like, I was working. I was applying for places. I was going through the county. I kept being denied. Everything was just no. I never heard of no.
Okay, so then when did the light switch? When did it turn?
So one day I got up and I went to the county downtown and I'm like, listen, I've been down here multiple times. I need help. You know, I'm homeless. I'm living in a storage unit. And they were like, no. And I just cursed them out. I just went ballistic in Hennepin County. Like, you have got to be kidding.
The front desk is caseworker?
The caseworkers. Yep. They was like, no, we just cannot help you. And so I got on the bus to go back to the storage unit and I called my mom. And my mom answered the phone, and I'm on the bus, the 4L, and I am screaming. I'm talking to my mom, I'm crying, I'm screaming. I'm just like, oh my God, I can't do this. I'm so scared. Nobody's ever going to help me. And I had just lost it. And people on the bus were like, oh my God, are you okay? What can we do? And so finally, my stop came. And my mom, she never said anything. Like, she sat on the phone, she just cried. I could just hear her crying. She never spoke, she never said nothing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, then I stop. I'm going to call you back. And so I hang up, I go to my storage unit. And I just prayed in that storage unit. I just prayed in that storage unit. And the next day, a shelter that was always full, always. I called them. They're like, yeah, we have a space. And I was like, oh. And I went there and I slept for like 3 days. The caseworker was like, we didn't even bother you because you had slept for so long. So I had slept.
Your son was with you then?
Yep.
Okay.
I was working at the Country Inn & Suites. Bloomington, next to the Mall of America. So I was working a night shift as a night auditor because I'm like, if I'm going to be homeless, I'd rather have a job at night and be able to, you know, be up on the day. And then an apartment over on 26th and Broadway by Milk Memorial, Alliance Housing, I applied for them. It was like, yes, we'll take you. And that was 2019. And so everything after that just seemed to propel for me.
Nice.
Yeah.
2019, that's not
what did that feel like when you moved in?
I bought a bed. I bought a bed. Oh my God, I bought a bed. I was like, I don't care. Right. I worked all night, and then when I got off work, I went to the housing little store for the furniture. I'm like, I want this bed, brand new. Should be. I don't care what it costs because I had saved up so much money from not having any responsibility or any bills really.
Yeah.
I went and got my sheets and.
Yeah, because see, your homelessness, I think, is a little different than what people would typically think of homelessness. And I think yours, you're smart, bright young woman, capable of taking care of yourself. just denied access to housing.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of people who are homeless or on the streets, there's mental illness, those kinds of schizophrenia, those kinds of issues. But you were just someone that was unable to get housing due to this felony on your
Was the felony what it was that made it so difficult for you? Because other people who come home with felonies get places and different things like that, different resources that they use.
It was a felony. And I just knew, I heard people talk about like those landlords who was like, oh, you just give us some extra money. I was hoping to run into that. I never ran into any of them.
Yeah.
I felt like it was God in my life at that moment. Mm-hmm. And I tell people that all the time. People be like, are you mad at your family for your family not, you know, being there for you how they were? And I'm like, sometimes I feel like we need to walk with God alone. No other avenue would be available. Mm-hmm. And so no other avenue was available.
Mm-hmm.
And so it matured me
mm-hmm.
in so many ways. And it grew me in so many ways. And so I felt like that moment, that 4 years, that homelessness was necessary.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you started getting on track. You started feeling like, you know, you were getting your feet beneath you as far as moving forward so you can do things. So
I'm sure your son was happy.
Yeah, you got your son in school? Was school? Yes. How were you able to manage that with him?
He went to so many schools. I mean, I had to. No job would. I would do so many jobs in so many schools because I didn't have the stability.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to move him when I moved. Right. And sometimes jobs want me to work extended hours, and I'm like, I can't.
Mm-hmm.
Because my son gets out of school at this time. Sometimes I would bring him to work, and he's like, oh, you can't have him here. I'm like, well, I got to quit. Because what do you want me to do with him? Mm-hmm. You know, so he went to a lot of schools. I went through a lot of jobs. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing was stable.
How is he doing now? Is he getting well adjusted?
Yeah.
And then he's got stability?
He is. I always, leave open that room for conversation if he ever wants to talk about it. Because he seems like it didn't affect him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always wonder in the back of my mind, like, is he going to lash out at some point? Is this going to be the cause of something that he does in the future? So I always see that room for him to say anything pertaining to that situation. And I talk to him about it all the time. He's like, Mom, remember we were homeless and we slept here? And I'm like, I do remember. Don't remind me. Don't remind me that you remember. But he remembers so much, but he's awesome. He is.
So you think this whole experience has given you the ability to help others, reach out to others, minister to others. You feel like there's a message in this experience.
Definitely.
That's what I'm hearing.
Definitely. So I started an organization that is for women who have background, who struggle mentally with just trying to cope with what they're going through, who may still be homeless. So I started going around the shelters, just talking to women, you know, and trying to encourage them, empower them, and just be positive in their lives, you know. And I get so much feedback, and I learn so much about other women and their perspective. And I think, like you mentioned, people think homelessness, and they think all those weird drugs.
Right.
And, you know, there's these things that you're not trying, but I was homeless before you, and I was trying.
Mm.
And so you wouldn't know that unless you actually talk to that person that's walking down the street there, you know.
Right.
They were trying.
Right.
So just about being a blessing, because I had so many blessings when I was home. It's like random people. This man one day came up and gave me all the money in his pocket. And he was a white man. He was crying. Like, he broke down and started crying. Oh, my God. And so, yeah, he was great. You know, I ran into so many random people and thought it made me want to be a random blessing to people.
Let me ask you this. What stopped you from going back to Chicago when you were going through all of this?
Well, at the time, my mom lived in Florida, and my sister was in Kentucky.
So
my major backbones were gone. Yep, my major
backbone. You ever thought about going to go live with them when you were going through all of this? Or?
I did try to live with my sister. Well, we're sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after about a week, we were like,
Right.
So I was about to chew her head off. Because
how about
was,
your brothers? Any one of those?
Nope.
No? Not an option for you.
My brothers just, I didn't want to put this off on them because it was heavy. It's a heavy load.
Right.
And so I knew that mentally I was already going through a lot of things, and I was kind of being respectful of where they were in their lives and not trying to add on to it.
Right.
My sister is my backbone, so I went to her first. you know, like my sister.
So were they all aware, including your brothers, that you were pretty much homeless, yeah, that you didn't have a place out here that you
were they encouraging, or was it like, girl, you gotta work it out? No.
In fact, it was probably the hardest time that I had with my siblings and my mom, because I felt like they were all mean. They were bad, like, they just seen it as, you did it, so you live with it. You know, you call this upon yourself, so you work it out. And it was that attitude.
So you think they felt the incarceration, you know, you deserved what happened after that? Because of the incarceration, well, you know, if you hadn't have done that, you wouldn't have had that felony and so forth.
My mom said it to this day. Like, you chose that. So, and I'm just like,
it's not
okay.
Yeah.
She had a glance out.
Yeah.
I was bumping heads with it.
How's your relationship with them now that you've come through that and you're doing all these wonderful and positive things? Has that evolved? Or?
I pray about it daily. Just due to the fact that I have to look at them and engage with them knowing that the time when I need them the most, I still can't rely on them. But I still have to treat them like that's my mom, that's my sister, those are my siblings, and give them this utmost amount of love. But in the back of my mind, I hurt, you know.
Do you feel resentment?
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Have you sought you know, therapy?
Oh, yes. I'm in therapy.
Yeah.
I've been in therapy since I got my place in 2019.
And it's helping.
Yes.
I believe in it.
Yeah.
I believe in it wholeheartedly.
Yeah. I have to stay in therapy. I struggle with PTSD.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
For a brief second, I'm going to reintroduce Luana on some subject. She's been through some things to herself and had to come home under similar circumstances. How is it different for you, Luana, in terms of what you hear in Jamaica say when you came back?
I had a good support system. You know, I had really great friends and my family supported me. So I can only imagine what you had to go through, what you endured. I couldn't hide my young. My heart goes out to you, and I know you have overcome it and everything. But I had a really good support system. It was hard.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're strong and you believe in God, and I just feel like He gets us through it all. He gets us through it all.
Yeah.
While I was away, I battled breast cancer. You know, I had stage 4 breast cancer. I only had like a 25% survival rate. But I tell you what, those strangers that I was with took care of me.
Yeah.
They took good care of me. And I'm not ready to go into details yet as of yet. About my ordeal in terms of, but I will share with you that, you know, I think that when we feel like we don't have any other alternative, no other way, the only person we can turn to is God, you know?
He was great.
Yeah, he was.
Look at you, see you with
a beautiful smile on your face. And, I just admire your peace, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I don't think that I can be as forgiving, you know? I just don't think I could be as forgiving, because I feel like at our lowest point in our life, that's when we should be able to depend on our family and our friends.
Yeah.
And I don't care all that about you made that, you choice, you did this, you did that. I could not go to sleep at night in my warm bed knowing that a family member was suffering.
Yep. Yeah.
So I admire you for that.
Thank you.
I really do.
No, yeah, it's a very uplifting story. And you've just shown such resilience.
Yeah.
And
she's been in a position to do what she's doing for people now. I think sometimes we go through challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Will and I have been through some challenges. Obviously, I want to share at a later point. It will be a pretty involved story about what we've been through. And I think we're here on these chairs with you ladies today as a result of that, when we might not have done that normally. That we was off somewhere else doing something on a plane, in a different city, doing something like that. So we all are going through, collectively, we're all here because we've been through something. Through some of us through choices and some of us through circumstances and things that we didn't think would ever happen to us.
Yeah. We didn't have much choice then.
Yeah.
So I wanted to say too, from this experience and what you've gone through, it looks like you're planning on having a book come out.
Yes.
I am.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about that.
We all talk about books around here.
We all got books coming out.
So it really just kind
of. Hold on, let me show you my book right now.
The book really just kind of encompasses kind of the cover up, is what I call it. So the book is titled Wigs, Wine, and What Else.
Okay.
And it's because I love my wigs and I have my wine, but the book kind of unfolds the what else that happens.
Moscato, right?
Huh?
Moscato?
Yes. So the book kind of uncovers the what else. Mm-hmm. And so it takes you through five chapters of my life that I feel like you kind of want to know a little bit more about Jamaica and how we kind of got here. So I take some of my deepest events in my life and I just put them in those five chapters. And I talk about how it, you know, God brought me through those. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, wigs, wine, and what else? Yeah.
We're looking forward to it.
We can't wait to read it. Okay, so what are you looking forward to most right now with your life? Given you've been through so much, and you've overcome, you continue to overcome, you're continuing to be such a, you know, a wonderful message to those out there who
the inspirations that people go through,
who need inspiration.
Because I'm sure you meet people now in the walk that you're in and what you're doing that are going through something similar, and obviously they can listen to what you have to say.
Yeah. I meet them all the time on the streets. I meet them in shelters.
What do you tell them when you meet them? What do you say?
That I don't judge them.
Mm-hmm. That's important.
Because you're empathetic.
Yeah.
You've been
so
there.
Many people judge me. And you... I used to see homeless people on the streets, and I was one of those people. They would be in cars. I'm like, they're homeless. They don't touch me. You know? And just having this idea of them. Mm-hmm. And so I became one, and I was like, people were looking at me like that, and I was like, oh my God, that has to be the most like feeling. It just made me feel some type of way, and the fact that I was putting that feeling off on others, and I looked at them. Now I hug them. Mm-hmm. You know, I did just run into somebody to get my food to all the time. He's still homeless and he's still in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and I hugged him and I bought him something, and I went to Wells Fargo and I took money off and I gave it to him, you know, and I just encouraged him. You know,
did you ever hold up one of those signs?
No. But you know, I was thankful that I had lost all of my moral code, everything had failed. So I didn't have anything. At the same time, I had those walking blessings where people would just look at me or give to me. I just would think that was like God's sign. Okay, I got you today. It was just a reminder that God was present.
Do you ever find yourself pulling up to those people that had those signs during the month?
Yeah.
I do. All the time. I do. And one day I was doing it, and I had a few of my girlfriends in the car, and they said, well, LaWanna, you shouldn't do that because their spirit can jump off on you. And I said, and they had a kid. I said, no.
Yeah.
I'm going to continue to do this. And one time, another time, the police got up behind me and made me tell me I couldn't do that and made the people leave. I was like, that's crazy. But I always do it. If I can get to them, if I have change on me and I'm not in the far left lane or right lane or whatever, or the stop sign, I do that. I've been doing it for years.
Okay. So again, I wanted to revisit that question. What are you most looking forward to? Where's Jamaica headed right now? What are you looking? You're obviously working on your book. You want to continue to, you know, you got your video blog out there.
Yep.
You're in real estate?
Yes.
Of all places?
Yeah.
So what? Real estate with a purpose?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's important. My goal is to just be a vessel. My goal is just to be a vessel. You know, after that, I just realized I gotta give. There's no way God gave me that. And I can't give that. I can't show people that no, God is who says he is. And so that's my agenda every day. That's my agenda. I'm like a walking, you know, book. And so I just, I want to be a vessel.
That's I just want to give. I pray that God gives to me as I continue to give to others. That's my thing. I just want to give to others. You know, I want to do for others.
You've taken your experience and now you've developed purpose.
Yeah. Wow. And I think it was me finding my purpose. I tell people all the time, I would have never known my purpose had I not went that experience. People see it as such a bad thing. Oh my, it's homeless. I'm like, no, you got to look at the positive.
Right.
What, how I've grown, what I've learned, what I know now that I didn't know then, the lies that I'm changing, you know, on social media. So many people reach out to me with their stories and they follow me and they're like, thank you for sharing your story because we get to see the glitz and the glam on social media. But I'm on social media and I'm like, exposing it, and so it's raw, it's authentic, and so just being that, you know, just allowing God to move in my life so I can move my others.
Well, you've inspired us already here. Anybody, we got some folks behind us. Anybody want to chime in and have a question as we're coming to the close of the show?
Well, I don't have a question, but I just have an encouragement word for you, is that am I sitting here and hearing some of it, your story, because I wasn't here at the beginning. But to say that you were chosen to walk that path so that you are moving forward into your now, into your present. So God had you at the beginning, and he's going to have you at your beginning.
By the way, if anybody wondering who this voice is over our shoulder, this is Lady O, our amazing our chef, our older niece. But also a beautiful soul. Another question.
Okay, real quick. I'm just wondering, are you planning or have you been approached already turning your story into a screenplay for a possible movie?
So I've kind of been reached out by a few different industry people in my email. But I'm very much aware of my family. And I know that my situation doesn't put them in the best light. So I'm kind of being mindful and praying about how they'll be uncovered and how they'll be looked at. So I have been, but I'm
so you. Speaking of that, was it Revolt TV?
I did Revolt TV, and they kind of came at me so sporadically, but it was about a YouTube video.
For those of you who don't know, Revolt is a television network owned by P. Diddy. Is that correct?
They watched a few of my YouTube videos and wanted to do a something like this. It was live, and it was about my take on whooping kids. I was like, yeah, beat them. Like the Bible said, spread a rod, whatever Jesus said. So I have done a couple things, and there is a few other things that I'm currently working on, but I pray about the moves that I make. You know, sometimes you can get into these type of situations, and it's no longer your purpose is no longer of God, so I like to pray about things before I step into them.
Good question. Oh, by the way, that question over my shoulder again is from our another wonderful soul, my niece, Almeda. Thank you, Almeda.
She is a screenwriter.
Are you? Well, then Almeda may be the one. I trust her.
One more question? Okay, well, I think we enjoyed having you here talking. This is not your last time. You'll be regular with us here, and so you've got so much wisdom to share with those that are our listeners, and so we're looking forward to hearing more coming from you. So
let me know.
All right. Well, thank you all for tuning in to us, listening to Jamaica's story. There's so many more to come.
There's a lot of stories to come, Roy. We're going to be getting this broadcast set up where you'll be able to subscribe to it. We'll be running some live broadcasts where you'll be able to be in the comment section when you're listening to Luana or Jamaica or whoever's sitting on this couch, throw a Roy, and I'll just throw some stuff at the screen if you don't disagree. whatever. But we're going to have a lot of opportunities that we're opening up as we get our inaugural broadcast going. We'll be talking shortly in the next week or so with a biographer on our next show that's writing a book with us, with Roy and I.
Touch on our story.
So we'll be able to share more about our story, too, and talk about who this gentleman is by the name of Jake Brown. So we'll all be here for that. But again, we're going to structure this, set this up, get this out to the audience, to all you listeners out there, and look forward to sharing more stories with you.
Thank you for joining us.
Definitely. Thank you.
Yes. All right. I'm signing out. Jamaica Funk. That's what it is.